This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters Podcast. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And Ryan, what do we got going on today?
Our focus today is on storytelling. We are going to be speaking today with David Pokorny. He was featured in the March 2017 issue of the Toastmaster magazine in an article entitled Story Takes a Turn. David is a former Toastmaster and a former stand-up comedian, and he is currently the founder of West Side Stories in Petaluma, California, which is a storytelling event. You might even call it a storytelling movement. David Pokorny, welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast.
Thanks, gentlemen. I appreciate that. Thanks for taking time out to chat with me.
David, when I think about storytelling, my mind tends to go to folk tales and fairy tales, or maybe even a librarian sharing a story with children. But I know the storytelling landscape has changed quite a bit over the past several years. So to start off, can you tell us, what does storytelling look like today?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the first things, apparently you've looked at our website because it says storytelling, fairy tales, no, folklore, no, and they're not myths, not legends, they're not bedtime stories. These are all personal narrative stories that we do at our thing, and I have nothing against all of those other forms of storytelling. In fact, we hope to include them in a festival we're producing this year, but you know, it's just not what I do. I made my living as a stand-up comic for 10 years, and you know, for the most part, I did quote unquote jokes that I had no real life connection to until I met a comic who was a storyteller. And he told me, if you don't invest something, put something out there for the audience, they're not going to remember who you are. And so I started telling some stories. They're humorous stories, but they had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I tried to take people on the journey with me, which is not always easy to do in a nightclub. So I started to evolve as a storyteller and devolve as a comic. The gigs started getting fewer and fewer, and that was fine. I don't miss nightclubs, stand-up comedy at all.
So what motivated you about joining Toastmasters? Was it to improve your delivery? Was it to get more practice, meeting contacts, or perhaps just to tell stories?
Well, part of it was I was a stay-at-home dad at the time, and just being out with adults was nice. And so I found this great group of people here in town that, you know, probably if it wasn't for Toastmasters, we wouldn't have had anything else in common. I mean, there was a bus driver and a woman who sold pharmaceuticals, and there was a mathematician and a scientist and all these things that Toastmasters brought us together. And we actually learned from each other a lot of different things. I I don't think I'm letting the cat out of the bag. I was further advanced when it came to public speaking than a lot of these people, but I certainly valued all of their input on the types of stories and the possibilities of the ums and the buts and the ifs and all of that stuff that is unnecessary when you're telling a speech. And so the editing was really important to me to keep it within the time frame. I loved the way that Toastmasters meetings were run and got to be the master of ceremonies several times, and, you know, had my own jobs at the meetings. And it turned out to be just a lot of fun, a lot of learning. And the reason that I chose to join after going that first time was that I was so taken that I could actually stand in front of a room full of people and tell my story and not have to go to what comics would go to, would be an open mic. And these people were there to listen. They were there to learn as well as I was. And they were there to support. And that's what I needed at that particular time. I needed to get my stories on paper, get them out in front of adults, and figure out how one would flow into the next one. And it really helped me a lot. And also what helped a lot too was the table topics. You know, when you just pull a little topic out of the hat and you're going to speak extemporaneously for a couple of minutes about it and try and have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And that's what the beginning, middle, and end was really, really important for me because that's what a good story has. It doesn't just wander like this answer to your question, but it actually has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it's written in ways to set up the end. And I felt that Toastmasters helped enormously in that. And if I had more time in my life, a couple of Thursdays, which I think is when the meeting still goes on here, I would go again. But I do have a lot of Toastmasters come to my West Side Story shows and throw their name in the hat and get up there and tell stories.
I've never been to one of your West Side Stories events before, David.
What's holding you back?
About 3,000 miles.
But all right. I'm familiar with the format. I listen to the Moth radio show on NPR as well as the podcast and have been doing that for a couple of years. And I actually had a chance to go last month to a Moth main stage event here in my local community. I know your events are modeled after the Moth Story Slam format.
Absolutely.
So can you share a little bit about what that format is like and how you started with that?
Yeah, I will. My wife and I, we were lucky enough to, let's put it this way, we were fortunate enough to be friends with someone who won a trip to New York, couldn't go, so they gave it to us. We went to New York, and while we were there, we got to see a Stephen Sondheim play. I hate musicals, by the way, but we got to see the show. And then we had some extra time while we were there, and one of the things we said we needed to do was go to the Moth, which is in Brooklyn. So we packed our luggage and got on a subway and went out to Brooklyn. And what was the coolest thing was we were standing, it was March, maybe. It was really cold out, let's put it that way. And we were standing in line with 300 people waiting to go into a club to hear, we had no idea who. I don't want to call them nobodies because everybody's somebody to somebody else, but they were not famous people. They were everyday people walking, you know, librarians and teachers and bartenders and what have you, all dropped their name in the hat to tell a 5-minute story based on the evening's theme. And we went and I dropped my name in the hat. I didn't get on. I think there were 17 people and they only pulled 10, just like at my show. Otherwise, you can be there all night, and you got to put a stop to it at some point. So we saw that. And when we came back to town here to Petaluma, we said that was the coolest thing, and our town would be a really good, you know, venue for something like that. And so we looked on the Moth website, and they had a page that we clicked on that said, if you want to run your own story slam, this is how we do it. And we followed their model to the T for the first 6 or 8 months of what we did. And then, you know, we sent the tapes to them because we were going to try and be affiliated with them, be a Northern California version of the Moth was our goal at the time. And it turned out that, you know, the person we sent the tapes to, when we called back in, their job had, you know, changed or they left the company or something and the tapes were lost. And we were like, oh, well, let's just, because one of the things is you're not supposed to advertise. And we were like, how do we get bodies in here to know what we're doing if we're not advertising? Hmm. We're not a nonprofit. In fact, I enjoy profit, to be honest with you. And so we have kept going, and essentially the format is still the same, but we, instead of having a couple of pools of judges, they have like a 2-person party of judges and a 3-person and maybe a 4-person. So they have 3 little teams of judges. I don't do that. Originally, we started just pulling a name out of the hat from the audience, and they would say who their favorite person was for the night. And now we do an automated online poll where people text their vote in, and we get a true audience favorite. We get, we've had as many, we see 80 people in our room, and we sell out every show for the last over 3 years now. And we get about 50 to 60 people that actually pull out their phone and vote. And we get a true audience favorite as opposed to this little group of people's favorite.
Right.
That's great. That's a great idea.
And then the other thing that, you know, the winners, like I think you said you went to one of their main stage shows, the Moth.
Yes.
We have every December, we have our Grand Slam and we have it in our you know, our town is 50,000 people. For those of you who haven't been here, and I'm still holding you to that because you guys are coming. But we have a venue called the Mystic Theater, which seats 450 people. In the last 2 years, we've moved our Grand Slam over there, and we've sold that place out. which has, you know, this storytelling movement, as you said, is taking hold right here in the 707 area code. And we have some bigger and more grandiose ideas of what's going to happen here in town when it comes to storytelling and public speaking.
Exciting. Cool. Now, I know that every West Side Story event, like The Moth, has a theme. Can you give an example of what are some of the themes that you've had for your events?
Well, I remember the very first show that we did, which is in 2008. First show we did, our theme was the first. So it could be your first time doing anything. And then we've had the worst, of course. This particular year, the first six shows of the year, I just come up with ideas for themes, and what I've come up with is they're all oxymorons for the first 6 months of this year. Like, for example, in January we had new traditions, then we had second best, and next month will be passive aggressive, drawing a blank, awfully nice, uninvited guest, and people come in with a 5-minute story based on one of those themes. And, you know, sometimes when the next 6 months is coming up, we just put them out 6 months in advance. I will go onto the internet and just punch in something like a stitch in time saves nine. And I will get all kinds of different ideas from that. And I'll put together a list of things. And then my wife and I, you know, sit around and narrow it down to six and put them out there.
Does it ever happen that people show up at the event, put their name in a hat, and they end up being drawn, and then they're supposed to get up there and give their story based on the particular theme, but their story doesn't have anything to do with the theme?
Yes. In fact, we had a gentleman, it was his first time coming to the show this last past month, where the theme was second best. And he came, and essentially he told an old joke. And I've had that happen a couple of different times where they get up there and they start to tell this thing, and I know exactly where they're going. I've heard this joke. As much as they want to personalize it, it's a joke. This is right. Not a true story. So I will make mention of it. I will not mock them, although I will make mention of it when they finish and, you know, get their round of applause and I get back on stage. I will question them. That was a true story, right? And then I will make sure that the audience, you know, this person is not going to, I don't skewer the votes. If the votes came in and that person was the winner, I would have to say that person is the winner. I have had somebody do a rap song one time. I think it was called The Grandmother Rap, and she was, you know, in her 60s and did this. And I think the audience voted for her just out of the fact that the sheer guts of getting up there and doing it, but it wasn't a story.
Right.
And, you know, I've spoken to those people privately and said, look, here's what we do. And here's the guidelines for storytelling at this particular event. And we would like you to hold up to these guidelines. They're true stories told live on stage without notes based on the theme. They're 5 minutes long. I hit a bell at 5 minutes, like a little hotel bell, you know, a little ding, and let them know that 5 minutes is hit. They have 59 seconds to wrap it up at that point. And otherwise, they're not eligible to win. And I think I probably should have hit the bell a couple of different times on people that I wanted to make sure didn't win, but I have never done that.
Right.
Since we're talking about stories, I'll tell a quick story. You were talking about original material. So I was the warm-up speaker for our Toastmasters Club for the humorous speech contest. They needed somebody, so at the last minute, I said, yes, I'll do it. Like, you know, 5 minutes before, literally 5 minutes before. So I told a story about the dog comes in the house with a rabbit in his mouth, like all chewed up and bloody and dirty. And then we wash it off because we don't want the neighbor to know that our dog killed the rabbit, cleaned it up. We put it back in the cage. And then the neighbor comes back to us and says, you won't believe the weirdest thing happened. Our bunny died 2 weeks ago. We buried it. And when we came back from vacation, it's all clean and in the cage, but still dead. So
that's hilarious.
That's like an old joke. It's like a long, I made a whole story out of it. And people are going nuts. They're cracking up. They're sitting at the edges of their seat waiting to find out, like, what's happening? Oh, no. And then they all came up to me after and saying two things. One, you got to take this as a speech for the speech contest because it was one of the best things they've heard. And then two, asking me about the neighbors and like all these questions. I said, whoa, wait a minute. This was a totally copied story. This is like a common joke. I can't believe you haven't heard this before. And they were so upset.
Yeah, they do. They get invested. And that's the one thing I like about the personal true stories is people do get invested in the story. They want to know how you as a human being dealt with that situation, whether it be a funny situation or a tragic situation. I've had somebody come on stage at our show and her sister died in the Twin Towers on 9/11. And she told the story of that. And we were all on the edge of our seat. We all just wanted to give her a big group hug at the end of the story. Hmm. And there's something they're invested and our audience is invested. And I feel that that is so much different than working in a nightclub like I used to do.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there is a big lesson here. And the big lesson is if you're going to make up a story and try to pass it off as authentic, you're going to get in trouble. And we've encountered this plenty of times, Ryan, with people in our club. We're like, wait a minute. Or even when we hear a speech, we're like, I don't know about that.
Right.
I think I kind of heard that before.
Well, but... And, you know, I called out somebody, you know, he had come to our he's actually the winner of this last year's Grand Slam. He happens to be a debate coach at a really well-known high school here in town, or not in our town, but just north of us a little bit. Brandon Spars is his name. And he told the story the first time he was ever at our show that was completely outlandish and crazy and wild. And he didn't win. But the next month he came back and told an even more outlandish story. And a few of my regular audience members and tellers called me up or wrote me email and said, hey, I don't think that guy was, I think that was a made up story. And so I called the gentleman up and I asked him about it. And he said, you know what? I can 100% guarantee you that is an absolutely true story. And if people want to call other people that were there, then I'm more than happy to give them phone numbers. And I said, no, I'm going to take your word for it. And he's a fantastic teller. And like I said, he was our grand champion this year. So it's okay to take some writer's license, I think, as long as the story, the essence of the story is true. That's the bottom line.
Okay, that brings up a sort of a philosophical topic that I wanted to dive into a little bit. And Bo and I have had these discussions over the years with, I guess, the, what do you call it? The inciting incident was a speech at Toastmasters, often at a contest, where we've questioned the veracity of the story or some of the details. And even in my own Toastmasters club, I have given some speeches where I've told a story, for example, about my daughter. And to bring a little more immediacy to the story, I'll have my daughter coming up to my wife and I and asking us a question or telling us something, where in actuality, it was really a conversation between my daughter and my wife. And I feel that it just gets to be too many steps removed to say, well, my wife told me this story about a conversation she had with my daughter. So for the sake, I feel like it's almost a, not out of respect for the audience, but to just make it more accessible to the audience, I'll take that liberty. But we've seen other things done where it's clearly a stretch. And even, you know, sometimes people get frustrated, I think, at contests. Like, come on, did that really happen that way?
Or, and that's a big question. Where do you draw the line?
Yeah. Or is this event really the thing that changed your life forever? Like, everything's always so superlative, you know, melodramatic. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think that, again, the writer's license you can take, as long as the facts are true. I mean, that your wife and your daughter had that conversation, to me that works. I did a solo show that I talked about that Toastmasters led me into. I called it Based on a True Story because I just felt that everything I'm telling you is based on a true story. When you see that at the beginning of a movie, you know that everything in that movie didn't happen. Sometimes there may be a character that they omitted from the story because they only had this one pivotal thing that to say. And so you gave that one pivotal thing to some other character. But the one pivotal thing did get said to this person to change their philosophy on life or whatever the situation happens to be. So I feel that loose facts or the possibility that someone else said this exact thing to you doesn't matter within the context of the story. The essence of the story being you and your daughter and your wife had this moment. Well, it doesn't matter that part of the moment happened without you there. What really matters is the again, you're doing a performance too, so you have to be entertaining to the audience as well. Yeah. We had one guy that came in and he literally said, "I just saw this on YouTube," and he told this story of what he saw on YouTube. And I told him afterwards, I go, "That's not a personal narrative at all. You know, the fact that, you know, nothing happened in the room while you were watching the YouTube, that would be the story. But you reciting to me what happened on YouTube is not a story. Right. And we want to hear what happened in your real world." So right. I think taking a few little liberties is certainly not a problem. And again, things get edited for reasons. And, you know, you want to move the story along and you need to jump from dot to dot. You know, to connect all those dots at some point, sometimes you need to take a slight liberty, and I don't have any problem with that at all. I do something in when I tell a story that I talk about, it's something that actually happened is, you know, I went into a hotel and said, you know, "My name's Dave, I'm here to do the show," and I was supposed to get a room, and the guy said, "What's your name?" And your name isn't here, and this and that. And I said, "What name do you have on the thing?" And he said, "Well, it says right here, comedians will vary." And I went, "Oh my God." And it really happened that he said, "Will vary." And I had to tell him, I said, "That means there'll be different comedians." Okay. And so that actually happened, but I do sometimes use that in a different context. I mean, I did a show just recently where I used that particular story saying that, "Hey, the show that I'm doing, it was really nice. They put me up in this hotel over here." And I told that story. And the point is that really happened. It didn't happen today, but it really happened.
Right.
So I felt fine with saying that, you know, this is what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of not as funny if you say, "Back in 1992, I was checking into this hotel."
Exactly. Again,
I think it's the immediacy.
And it wasn't me that checked in the hotel. It was my aunt's sister's cousin's best friend.
Right. Told me this story. And it wasn't really Will Vary. It said kind of. Right.
It was Jack Smith, but still.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Will Vary works much better for this.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I love this topic, and I wish we had more time to go even deeper here. Well, unfortunately, we don't have much more time for the episode. But I wonder if before we wrap up, if you could share with us, what's one tip you would give to someone who wanted to improve their craft of storytelling? What's the one piece of advice you could give them that's going to make all the difference in the world?
Well, I truly believe there's a story that I tell about the first time I ever went on stage, which is March 23rd, 1986. And I tell that story to this day, 31 years later, or almost 31 years later. And I tell that story and I relive that story. In my head, I can see the place where I was. I can see the guy that introduced me. I can see all of these things. So it feels as though I'm telling it for the first time, even though, like I said, I've been telling it for over 30 years. And people come to me and say, "God, that story is so good, the way you tell it and this and that." And I look at him, I go, "You know, I've been telling it for 31 years. That's why it's good, because I know it backwards and forwards, but I am living it every time, like it's the first time I'm telling it, because I am reliving that story in my head." So if you have a story and you can get the visuals in your head, or the whatever the sense memory, that's an acting thing, you know, the smell of the room or what have you, whatever it is, it will feel authentic, and it will feel authentic to the audience. And to me, that's when you get them. You've captured them when you're authentic with them.
Awesome.
How's that?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Dave. And where can people go to learn more about West Side Stories?
Well, you can go to westsidestoriespetaluma.com, and you will find out all about West Side Stories. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm going to do a quick plug. We are having our inaugural Wine Country inaugural Wine Country Spoken Word Festival, October 13th and 14th, right here in town. And we have Bill Lepp coming, and we have Sarah Vowell as well. And that's along with 12 other events we're having. So that stuff will be up on that West Side Stories website very, very soon. So West Side StoriesPetaluma.com.
Thank you so much, Dave. Appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
It's been fun.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.